In other words, you might not want to end your sermon with a bunny subjunctive. So let us do this and let us do that. That's right. Okay, quite a close correlation, as often is the case, between the Old Testament reading and the gospel. It's Matthew 18, beginning in verse 21. The sort of conversation between Peter and Jesus, which then leads into the parable of the unforgiving servant. And class actually starts at 12:30, right? So we got to allow time to get out of here. So let's jump right in. Verse 21. Then, approaching, people are always prosericomaing to Jesus. Then, approaching, Peter said to him, Peter approached and said to him, Kyria, Lord, the vocative, an adverb, how often, this is a little awkward, two futures linked by a chi. Actually, it looks sort of Semitic to me. How often ha adelphosmu, my brother, will sin hamartese into me, against me? How often will my brother sin against me, kai aphezo auto, and I will release to him? Aphiemi can mean a number of things here. Clearly in the context over against sin, it means forgive, as it often does. Now Peter, you know, gives the answer for which he expects some sort of praise, perhaps. Until heptakis, seven times, Jesus answered and said, no, that's not right. Jesus says to him, "U legosoi, I do not say to you, heos heptakis, until seven, Allah, heos, hebdomekontakis hepta," which either means, apparently it probably means 77, or it's possible that it means 70 times 7, or 490. And the grammars and the lexica are not agreed on this, but the point isn't a precise numerical quantity anyway, right? Jesus is doing his typical hyperbolic exaggeration in order to make a point. That is, no, seven times is not enough. In fact, you ought not even to be thinking in terms of limiting the forgiveness that you give to your brother when he sins against you. And Jesus uses this then as a springboard into a tremendous parable. One of the things I really like about the longer parables of Jesus is their artistry, and especially their use of parallelism to compare and contrast. And there's some nice, there's some of that stuff going on in here. Also, pay attention when you're trying to interpret a parable. Pay attention to actually how the story flows. I mean, these are stories that Jesus makes up in order to teach something, often, as here, about the reign of heaven, which has already been manifested in the present time through his own life and ministry. So he's making this up. He's doing it on purpose. They're not just, quote-unquote, everyday stories. There are exaggerated, unexpected elements in perhaps a majority of Jesus' parables. So it's a piece of narrative artistry, right? Verse 23, on account of this, the reign of the heavens was likened. The kingdom parables that begin with was likened or is like, estin hamayas, probably have as their primary focus some aspect of the present reign of heaven, as opposed to the kingdom parables that begin with will be likened to. Don Carson up at Trinity Evangelical Divinity School wrote a terrific article about 10 years ago, you know, comparing the introductions to the kingdom parables, and I think he's right. So this is focusing upon how it is under the influence of the reign of heavens now, right? Already because Jesus is here. On account of this, the reign of heaven was compared, and you always follow with the dative, to a man, a king, anthropo basilei. Now let's describe the situation. Who wanted a thelesen? This is just the aorist of thelo. It always looks funny because the augment is an eta and not an epsilon. But if I'm remembering right, it's because the older form of the verb is ethelo, so that you'd lengthen epsilon to eta, and you don't have ethelo anymore, but you still have this longer temporal augment on the front. So it's just an aorist indicative active third person singular. Who wished, and here's what he wanted, sin irai lugon, from sin iro. This is financial figure of speech, to it means to settle accounts, right? He wants to figure out who owes what to whom. So he wished to settle a word or settle accounts with the slaves of him, with his slaves. Verse 24, genitive absolute, arxamenu de autu. That's present tense. No, it's not. It's aorist. And after he began to settle, now haste, we'll catch the subject. One was brought to him. Now let's describe the one. One debtor of 1,000 talents. I suppose that would be an objective genitive. He owed 1,000 talents. You know, you can't calculate for inflation over 3 continents and 20 centuries, but this guy owes more money than many Roman provinces paid in taxes. I mean, this guy owes a huge debt. He is, to quote our former president, in deep financial doo-doo, right? Verse 25, me econtes de autu, another genitive absolute. This one works well to take it, as you can with all of these predicate position participles, and that's how genitive absolutes works. Let's take it causally. And because he does not have, because he did not have, in order to pay back, apodunai, the Lord ordered, and now we'll take this infinitive, prothenai, which is actually from piprosko, believe it or not. It's the aorist infinitive passive of piprosko, which means to sell. And it's expressing indirect discourse. He ordered that auton he be sold prothenai, and the wife, and the children, and panta hasa eke, all whatever he had, or he used to have. That present tense there is carrying over the original sense of the direct discourse, now in indirect discourse. So, again, this infinitive, you see this fairly often in the New Testament, an infinitive after verbs of speaking, commanding, perceiving, that kind of thing. So the Lord ordered him, ordered that he be sold, or ordered him to be sold, and his wife, and his children, and everything which he had, and to be repaid, or to be paid. The master wants his stuff. 26, falling then, the slave began to reverence him. The imperfect there, proskineo, began to reverence him, saying, makrothimezon ep emoi, be long suffering upon me, be patient with me, and all I will pay to you. This guy still has a problem. I am going to pay back 10,000 talents. Yeah, right. It's sort of like the prodigal son when he makes a plan, I'll go back and I'll become a hired slave, right? The repentance, there's something, the guy still doesn't realize how deep the doo-doo is. Right? Verse 27, my favorite Greek verb, splanchnizomai, means to have compassion, used only of Jesus or God in the New Testament, I think. Now that I've said that, it's probably wrong. But literally having mercy, the Lord of the slave, that guy, the Lord of that slave, released him, ap elizen. He released him, and the thing owed he forgave to him. Afaken is the aorist indicative active from afiemi. And so he doesn't say, it's kind of great. He doesn't say, okay, great, I'll give you time, pay me back. He doesn't say that at all. He simply forgives the thing which is owed, the debt. Now the story takes its dark turn, right? And going out, the slave, that guy, found Heoron from Heorisco, one of the fellow slaves of him who was owing to him 100 denarii. A denarius is apparently a day's wage. It's not a small debt, 100 days' wages. But compared to 10,000 talents, it's not even discernible. Who was owing to him 100 denarii, and seizing him, epnigen, he began to choke, saying, or I suppose you could say seizing, he began to choke him, but the sense is clear. He's got him by the throat. Apodos, apodos, pay if a certain thing you owe. That's a little awkward, but it's easy enough. Now, check out the artistry here. This fellow slave does exactly the same thing that the first slave does. He pezones, he falls, right? Then he falls, his fellow slave, and, now this is different, he began to beseech him, saying, and this is the same, makro thimezon epe moi kai apo dozo soi. He says the same thing. And the reader, the listener is going, and he's going to forgive him, right? Wrong. This is the parable of the unforgiving servant, right? So this is, what shall we say, law, maybe? There's a powerful gospel, but now, as the story unfolds, verse Ebelan Dautan, he threw him into jail until apodo. You might expect heos on there, because you have the aorist subjunctive of apodidomi, but heos, heos on, heos who, heos how to, all kind of futz back and forth sometimes between future and subjunctive. So, until he paid the thing being owed, substantive participle there. Verse 31, then, seeing, when they saw this, the fellow slaves of him, seeing ta genomena, seeing the happening things, when his fellow slaves saw what had happened, they were grieved, lupeo, this is a aorist indicative passive, sphodra, they were exceedingly grieved, and going, they reported, they diasapheod, it's a rare verb in the New Testament, they reported to the Lord of themselves all the things having happened. Then, calling him, the Lord of him, says to him, wicked slave, this is emphatically fronted. I mean, pazan, tain, ophelain, ekainain, all that debt I forgave to you because you besought me. Now we've got the impersonal verb eide in the past tense. You don't often see it that way, but it occurs. And the infinitive, eleazai, is actually acting as the subject of that. So, awkwardly, for you to show mercy to your fellow slave, was that not necessary? As hos kago, as I, you, mercied? That's a question introduced by Uk, and he expects him to say, yeah. Yeah, I was supposed to do that, right? And because he was angry, his Lord delivered him into the tormentors until he might pay all the thing being owed. Thus also the Father of me, the heavenly guy, will do to you if you do not forgive each one. This is interesting. Plural verb, singular subject. If each one of you does not forgive the brother of him from the hearts of you all. So we have some plural, singular, plural. The point is clear enough. Now, it's time to stop, but boy, you could make this a heavy, ham-handed law sermon, right? But the sequence is important. What was expected to motivate the unforgiving servant's forgiveness? It was the prior forgiveness of his master, right? The heinousness of his unwillingness to forgive flows out of the fact that he had already been forgiven. See? So for a law problem, the answer is ultimately simply the gospel, right? So, you know, this is a real powerful text, and it's a great opportunity to do law and gospel, but you have to be careful because, you know, it can become a law sermon in a way probably that Jesus didn't intend. So, and class starts for some of you in 8 minutes. So, whew. You know, we should, yeah, and that's law. Well, it depends on the class.